This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's continue our conversation on design and inclusion. There are plenty of elements out on the web that can compromise your device: viruses, malware, spyware, keyloggers, and probably a bunch of other stuff we're not even aware of. Sometimes a single click or a tap can take you down a dangerous digital pathway, which leads me to this question. Do websites designed without inclusive practices present an increased risk for a person with a disability? For his thoughts on this, we're joined by digital accessibility specialist Denis Boudreau. Denis is also the founder of Inclusive Communication. Hey, good morning, Denis. Great to chat with you once again.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
So, Denis, just before we jump into this topic, our paths have crossed outside of the Now with Dave Brown universe. I was recently interviewed on the A11Y Rules podcast with Nicholas Steinhout, a podcast that you've also appeared on. Nick does extensive work in digital inclusion. You wanted to take a moment just to talk about Nick and his work. What did you find yourself chatting about on his show?
Oh, well, Nick and I go way back. Long story short, we've met about, I want to say, 7 or 8 years ago, and he was this guy from New Zealand, and then I realized after a couple of months talking to him in English that he was actually a guy from Shawinigan, Quebec, that had moved over there, and he was actually speaking French also. So we discovered these things about one another, way after we've met. But he's always been someone who was very much involved in accessibility and in this space. And he started that podcast, I want to say, a little over 2 years ago now. And I might have been his second or third guest on that podcast. And back then, it was really about, having conversations with people who work in the accessibility space. Discover how they feel about it, like what their experience is like, their perspectives on different things. And then it kept evolving over the years in terms of the podcast itself. For those of your listeners who are interested in the podcast, interesting to hear about these questions, the podcast is called A11Y Rules. So A11YRULES. He does two things. He does these longer interviews, and he also does these smaller pieces, sound bites, which are really introducing or interviewing a person with a disability to get their perspective on a particular thing. So I appeared on that too, as a colorblind individual. So talking about my experience, using the web with a color deficiency perception, mm-hmm. and what that means in terms of my everyday, life working with the web or working with computers or things like that.
Yeah. He brought me on to talk about the perspective as someone who's legally blind, but who doesn't use a screen reader. And people mm-hmm. apparently were really interested to hear about how someone who identifies as legally blind doesn't necessarily think about the screen reader as their number one way of navigating the web. So yeah, we love the work that Nick does. So big shout out to Nick. I know he listens to the show on the regular. So right. Nick, keep up the great work, man. Always appreciate hearing from you. Hey, Denis, let's jump back into this topic of digital safety. In that intro, I posed a question as to whether or not inclusive websites can pose a greater risk for a person with a disability in terms of acquiring a malware, a virus, etc. And it does come from a bit of personal experience when I visit particularly cluttered websites with pop-ups that are opening new browsers, windows, tabs, or taking me to unwanted websites. And those pop-ups are oftentimes very hard to get off the screen. So, Denis, what do you think about my question there, my thesis about whether or not these poorly designed websites can create a danger for a person with a disability?
It pains me to say that I think you're completely right. There are so many different ways in which someone who doesn't have a full perspective of what the site offers be led into a particular pitfall in that sense. You can only imagine, you're not using a screen reader, so you probably don't get to see that as much as others would if they're using one. But all these different buttons, for instance, or links or call to actions that are not labeled. So you hear about a link, for instance, but you don't really know what the link is for. Every time that someone tries such a link, you know, just to see what's going to happen, they expose themselves to potentially being lured into, you know, any kind of issue like that. Images that are not labeled, for instance, you know, content that pops up on your screen and you don't know where that content is, and you have to explore that, but you don't really see what's going on, or you're not really hearing anything about what the concept is or the context is. All these things could easily lead into you being lured into some kind of a trap, or some kind of a, you know, downloading something that you didn't expect, or going to a website that you didn't expect. So yeah, there is, that definitely is a risk. And it's an interesting question, because, you know, we're so caught up in MySpace, we're so caught up in, you know, just making content accessible, working with organizations who are well-intentioned. But your question brings up the fact that some people could potentially take advantage of the fact that some people have disabilities, and therefore they are a certain disadvantage when it comes to navigating on the web, to actually take advantage of that. Mm. And that's a really interesting question that I want to spend time looking at, for sure.
I like it when I can ask a question that gets you experts thinking about stuff, when I can pull you guys out of your true expertise and drag you into my world of paranoia, yeah, and Ludditeness. Denny, so let's talk about some mitigations or proactivities that people can do here, if my thesis is indeed somewhat correct. What are some good habits that people can develop to keep their machines digitally clean? Is it something as simple as antivirus software, just keeping a good antivirus software on their machine?
Well, I think that's a given, right? I mean, in today's day and age, even if you're, like, you know, I work on a Mac computer 99% of the time, and so I feel rather secure compared to a Windows environment, for instance. But even then, I've learned not to trust just relying on Mac as an environment where typically you don't get viruses. It's not as true as it used to be. So I think that in terms of, you know, digital hygiene or you know, good habits or practice to have, I don't think that having a disability makes it any different than someone who doesn't. I mean, everyone should be very careful about not, you know, not clicking on any random link that seems a little weird or, you know, unexpected or anything like that. But maybe even more so if you are in a context where you're relying on a screen reader, for instance, because it's very easy it's very easy for me to put down a link that leads to a certain area, but then have some code that makes you think that it's going elsewhere. I mean, when you're, you know, when you're sighted, for instance, you could always mouse over that link and see the URL, see the actual, you know, destination of that link. It might help for some people, but if you can't do that because you can't operate a mouse, for instance, or you can't see any visual cues on the screen, you entirely rely on what the code actually says. And if the code was intentionally created to mislead you, you're likely to be misled. So I think there's a need to be more cautious, I guess, if you are non-sighted, for instance, and you rely on a screen reader. But everyone really should be very careful. And, you know, some of these things, like looking into, well, yeah, I mean, let's stick to that for now. But you know, antivirus software or anything that protects in that sense is certainly a good idea. And you know, obviously maintaining that, you know, at least weekly, I'd say, making sure that it's updated.
What about some other strategies? Like, I know some browsers offer things like ad blockers. I know I've heard from some folks saying, well, the key is to clear out your cache. And, you know, like, and I always wondered, like, are these effective strategies? Are these part of the ways in which we can mitigate some of the risks?
Certainly. I mean, I don't tend to use ad blockers myself, because I do a lot of assessment and auditing on websites, and I guess I'm a little lazy. I could disable them when I have to work on assessing things, but I guess accepted that they're the bane of our existence. I mean, they remind you of what your browsing history is and all that good stuff. But definitely, you know, If this is not something that you have to do and you just want a bit more privacy, that's certainly a good place to start with ad blockers. Another good place to start might be to turn on any of the incognito modes in your browsers so that you're not being tracked as much or at all by you know, different organizations, organizations or whatnot. Another option might also be to clearing your cache, as you said. I mean, doing that regularly is certainly a good idea. You don't want to go too far there, because if you have to re-enter your passwords all the time, it might be a problem. But, you know, another good practice might be to use any kind of password. I forget the exact name, but, you know, password software that tracks all of your passwords, like 1Password, for instance, or LastPass, that sort of thing. Not really pushing for any of those software in particular, but, you know, software that are intended to help you remember those passwords would make it easier. Now, again, from the perspective of someone with a disability, if those tools aren't particularly accessible, that doesn't help that much either. Yeah. So there's always that consideration of, yeah, there are tools out there, but are those tools really that usable? And oftentimes the answer, sadly, is not really, or not as much as we'd like to.
Right. It becomes this perpetuating cycle. Some of the tools you might use to protect yourself end up being inaccessible in and of themselves, which ends up sort of feeding into the trouble as well. Denis, we're a little tight for time here, but any other sort of overarching advice you want to offer just before we wrap up the segment?
Another good hygiene idea would be, don't use the same password everywhere. I think it's something that we've heard many, many times over, but it's probably not a bad thing to repeat it again. If you're the kind of person who tends to have 1Password and use it everywhere, that's a super bad idea. So having different passwords and changing them regularly is also a good idea. If you're, maybe one last thing real quick, I just heard of that. I haven't had a chance to try it myself, but I've heard of that recently. In the latest version of iOS, for instance, Apple has introduced this feature where you can sort of fake email addresses. And then, so when you register to a service, you can give them, you can let your iOS device sort of generate an email address for you. It redirects so you can track who's using that address. So if you have specific addresses that you're creating for every one of the services that you register to, you can then monitor which one of those addresses actually picks up a lot of activity. And that could tell you a bit about whether or not that organization, that service, actually sells your information to other people. And then you get flooded with that email address. And then you can make a decision about whether or not you want to keep that service or other things. But yeah, it's giving us a little bit of power back in terms of controlling who gets to spam us with stuff.
I like that. Tracking the trackers. Now we're getting somewhere. It's like counter surveillance. I like that idea. Yep. Hey, Denis, always fun catching up. Thanks for doing something a little bit different with us today. I always appreciate it.
Absolutely. You're very welcome. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. That's Denis Boudreau, Digital Accessibility Specialist. Denis is also the founder of Inclusive Communication. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.